and that is NRA Connell Living Trust, 71577. If you're ready, and if you wish to reserve any time, please so state.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Please, the court, Daniel Kiefer on behalf of the appellants. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
It's important to note, I think, at the outset that some of the issues in the case have been narrowed by the briefing. And what I mean by that is, currently, based on the briefs that have been submitted, there's no dispute regarding Ms. Ahern's conduct. Whether or not she did these things is not in question. Furthermore, there's no dispute regarding the application of NRS 163-00195. And what I mean by that is Ms. Ahern elected not even to address the statute, and yet this court has said that statute is mandatory. So what we're left with is we're left with a pure legal question of whether or not Ms. Ahern's undisputed conduct rises to the level to breach or violate the no contest clause.
How old is she?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How old is she?
I believe she's in her 80s.
Well, 80s. Is she 81? Is she 89?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't know the exact age.
Before you go there, can you address something for me just so we have it laid out? Violation of no contest clause as a beneficiary or as a trustee, would you address that first?
Certainly. The no contest clause does not specify who the actor is. It says a person. Whether you take an act, whether you have a dual role as trustee or beneficiary, it's irrelevant, Your Honor, because the issue is the settlor's intent. The settlor intended that anyone related to this trust who has a beneficial interest cannot take the act specified in the no contest clause.
I guess what concerned me initially, and I went back through and I went through the trust documents, ordinarily you have a hold harmless clause for the trustee. For very specific reasons, who's going to act as a trustee without a hold harmless? And I went through the trust, and I didn't see it, which surprised me. And was there one? Did I miss something?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't know exactly, but I do not believe there was a hold harmless clause. But to more directly address your question, the issue of trustee versus beneficiary, it's really a red herring. That was a defense that was kind of created out of whole cloth.
Well, not if there was a hold harmless. I don't get that impression. And again, maybe we can get some light on it on the other side.
Sure.
And what effect would it have if there was a hold harmless clause for the trustee, in your opinion?
Certainly. It would protect the trustee in her capacity as trustee. But as this court noted in its last opinion in this very case, Ms. Ahern took actions as trustee for her own benefit as beneficiary. In fact, one of the reasons this court was so upset with her the last time is because she was taking inappropriate actions as trustee to benefit herself as beneficiary.
Yes, but doesn't that undermine your argument? If she was acting as a beneficiary, you can make that distinction. A beneficiary can't make distributions, only the trustees. Wouldn't she have to, by necessity, be acting as her role as trustee?
Well, let me put it this way, Your Honor. If Ms. Ahern was only a beneficiary and she wanted to steal $2 million and she filed something with the court saying, give me $2 million, it would be immediately rejected and she would have invoked the no contest clause. The fact that she had easier access to the money due to her role as trustee should not excuse the same act.
You know, I struggle, though, to have the language of the no contest clause read as a whole apply to her breaches of fiduciary duty as a trustee. I understand that you think you've hopped over that fence, but I have some real difficulty with reading that clause as a whole. The first sentence says, we want these to be administered and distributed without litigation or dispute of any kind. I know you freight the word or pretty heavily, but litigation or dispute in the context of a no contest clause usually means the initiation of litigation over a trust or a distributive scheme. So that's where my head goes with that first sentence. And then you have the second sentence, which is cluttered with a lot of positives, but it talks about seeking or established to assert. I don't know what that means, but any claim to the assets of these. And then you quote Webster's for what attack means, and that her conduct as trustee was somehow an attack on the court. But I see this as more litigation related, and these are forfeiture clauses. We're to instruct to construe them very literally and very closely. So I need you to persuade me why her misconduct as trustee violated the no action or the no contest clause.
Certainly. First, I think we need to address the issue of the no contest clause. It's a bit of a misnomer, and here's why. In the statute, NRS 163-00195 at sub 2 makes very clear that a beneficiary's interest can be reduced or removed based on conduct other than formal court action.
But you're relying on the 10th provision. It's called no contest.
Correct. But then it defines no contest clause at section 6A as one or more provisions in a trust that express a directive to reduce or eliminate the share allocated to a beneficiary or to reduce or eliminate the distributions to be made to a beneficiary if the beneficiary takes actions to frustrate or defeat the settlor's intent as expressed in the trust.
You're reading the statute, not the clause in the trust document.
Correct.
I want you to walk me through the clause in the trust document and tell me how it applies to this woman's conduct.
Certainly. So what you have to remember is that the district court took jurisdiction of the trust, took jurisdiction and provided instructions to Ms. Aker, specific instructions. Segregate the money, don't touch it, and provide me an accounting. Ms. Aker, that would have been part of the administration of the trust. When the court takes jurisdiction of a trust, it can then dictate the administration of the trust. She then looked at those orders, took the money, failed to segregate it, and then submitted a false accounting where the district court, quote, said she intentionally misled the court. That was to seek, that was to oppose, set aside, or attack the administration or distribution of the trust. If the court gives you an order regarding administration of the trust and you disregard it, you are certainly attacking or setting aside the administration of the trust. And that would be how I'd respond to that, Your Honor. And
so you think any violation of fiduciary duty by a trustee that has a trust being administered by a court, if the trustee is also a beneficiary, will automatically result in no contest provision?
I do not, Your Honor. There are.
Tell me what distinction in this
certain
clause you're drawing.
For example, I can bring, as a beneficiary, I can bring a petition to compel an accounting from a trustee. I can bring a petition asking for damages against the trustee for failing to properly invest trust assets. I can bring a petition against a trustee for failing to make trust assets lucrative, i.e. renting out a house.
No, but my question was the obverse of that. What conduct by a trustee that is in violation ostensibly of a court order would not cause the triggering of a clause like this in your reading?
For example, if she failed to account. Simply failed to account and therefore was asked again to account.
So, counsel, under your position and the examples you cited, in every instance in which the trustee is hauled into court under each of the requests that you have made on behalf of beneficiaries, the response the trustee makes to those, even a merit response, one that has merit, would constitute a violation of the clause 10.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with that.
Well, what would be the distinction?
The distinction would be what the clause says. The controlling factor here is what the settlors intended as directed
but
by the
you,
plan.
You rely on the words attack, oppose, and so forth. So when the trustee walks into court and opposes the petition for an accounting, or a petition directing the trustee to invest funds, and they oppose it, they've just violated the no contest clause, in your view.
Well, and I think it's actually, let me restate that, Your Honor.
Have they?
Based on what you've said, I think yes, and I think that this court's ruling in ATS 1998 Trust would say the same thing. Because this court examined in July of last year the exact same provisions in a no contest clause and found them to be extremely broad. And in that case, a beneficiary who merely alleged that the administration of the trust had been improper, this court said it was a prima facie violation of the no contest clause. Now, that beneficiary was saved by the safe harbor provisions. And in fact, in this case, there's never been any allegation that any of the safe harbor provisions apply.
But isn't the point from what you just made, we're dealing with a trustee here, not the beneficiary. I mean, yes, they have dual capacities, but the role in which the trustee is responding, both in the innocent response of saying, I oppose the petition directing me to invest funds in a particular way because I've got investment managers that tell me to do it this way, and I'm going to follow their advice. Or the facts in this case, where the court undertakes administration, tells the trustee to do something, and the trustee wrongfully ignores the court's direction. In any event, the trustee is acting in this capacity, not the beneficiary.
Well, even if that's the case, Your Honor, I'm not sure why we'd want to protect a trustee who's also a beneficiary who's so willing to violate court orders regarding administration.
Well, there's lots of remedies available, many remedies available to a court, lots of law enforcement remedies available.
Certainly.
But the no contest clause is quite a different matter, and so is the statute that governs no contest clauses.
And I agree. And the key there, Your Honor, is that the remedy of choice here was designated by the settlors, and their intent dominates. That's the key. The settlors were the ones who put in this incredibly broad provision because they wanted to dictate how this trust was run. And in fact, it does not seem that there were problems with the way that the trust was run for many years. But now that she's run afoul, now that Ms. Ahern elected to run afoul of the settlors' intent, she can no longer reap the benefits from the trust. Essentially, what we're asking, Your Honor, is that the tap be shut off. And it be shut off not according to what we wanted, but according to what the settlors wanted. The settlors could have elected any language they wanted in their no contest clause. They elected what this court deemed extremely broad language.
But how factually does this apply to this the non-contest provision? Just piggybacking on what my colleagues are saying. She's not saying that she was right to have that money. She agrees she owes the trust money. She's not attacking the validity of the trust. She's not making a claim contrary to the trust. How factually are you fitting into this clause?
I'll give you the quickest response to that, Your Honor. After she was removed as trustee, she went to the bank and withdrew $500,000. I don't know how someone could make that claim and go get that money and put it in her own pocket and not be making a claim to trust assets.
With regard to that, would you address something simply for me?
Certainly.
In your opinion, was she subject to any undue influence here? And if she wasn't, tell me why not.
She was absolutely not subject to undue influence, and this is why. The answering brief has done a good job of trying to muddle this situation regarding undue influence. Ms. Ahern attended the trial both days. She could have got on the stand and testified regarding the alleged influence. She elected not to. She didn't call any witnesses regarding that except for her daughter. And here's the problem that belies the whole argument. Prior to that, she had submitted an affidavit to the court saying, Ms. Nuna has never influenced me. She has never had any effect on my decisions regarding the trust. That means that her own testimony stands unrefuted on the record.
So how do you explain
the relationship?
I'm not going to chew up your time.
I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal if you don't mind. Thank you.
Mr. Linhart?
May it please the court, counsel. I appear today on behalf of Eleanor Connell Ahern, the former trustee of the Connell Trust. I'm in a somewhat unusual position before this court today because I'm asking you to affirm an order. If to say it was harsh on my client would be a mild understatement. I'm asking you to affirm an order for explaining her conduct as trustee. Affirm an order where it was determined that she had improperly administered the trust. She had violated her duties as trustee. She had failed to segregate 65% of the trust per a court order. She had misapplied trust income. I'm asking that order be affirmed because we did not realistically challenge those findings at the trial. I'm also agreeing that her interest should have been surcharged as the court ordered to repay the funds that had been improperly taken. And in fact, her interest has been surcharged and it continues to be surcharged today. As well, she had to pay compensatory damages, punitive damages, and attorney's fees. The other beneficiaries to this trust have been made whole plus. The only thing we challenged at that trial, and Judge Sturman agreed, was that she should not be removed as a beneficiary of that trust. She should not forfeit her interest as a beneficiary of that trust. I would not be standing here today if the daughters would have accepted that decision of the court. I would not be challenging that order. I'm standing here today because the daughters want more. They basically want to throw their mother out on the street. And I have to oppose that. She is a beneficiary of that trust, and she has not violated that no contest clause.
Can I have you address something? I was about to ask a question of opposing counsel. He indicated that the language on the no contest provision was very broad and that the settlers specifically created that language, but in reading that, you know, the argument on the other side of that is, well, if they specifically wanted to craft that language, why didn't they include the trustees' actions as well as other persons and the beneficiaries?
Let me address that if I can. First of all, I don't see that language as that broad. It is a classic no litigation, no contest clause. Don't file suit. If you file suit, you're going to get $1. That's what that clause says. What's the beginning? The grantors specifically desire that these trusts created herein be administered and distributed without litigation or dispute of any kind. Could it be any clearer? Now, if the settlors desire to apply the no contest clause to the actions of a trustee, it would have been very easy to state that exact language in the no contest clause. Its absence is telling. That tells the court, it told the district court, and I'm hoping it tells this court, that the settlors did not intend to include the actions of a trustee under the no contest clause.
If you didn't interpret it that way, would you ever have a case where any trustee who happened to be a beneficiary would agree to act as a trustee? And here, when you have family relationships and you specifically want a particular trustee, it just seems to diverge. It just doesn't make
sense.
I'll
tell you this. The potential trustee is my client. I would let her do it.
Unless there's a whole harmless
clause. The risk is too great.
Mr. Linhart, would you distinguish, if you can, the assertion that was made that this differs because there was a specific overlay, that is, order of the court, of what the client was not to do, the trustee?
I don't see that as different because, again, she violated the court's order, and clearly that's not in dispute, Your Honor. She violated the court's order as the trustee. And the actions of the
but
trustee...
But there's no, in this case, as was Justice Farragher pointed out, there's no hold harmless.
I understand that. Clearly there's not a hold harmless. But again, if the settlors desire to hold the actions of Ms. Ahern for liability as the trustee, they would have said actions of the trustee would be included in the no contest clause. They are absolutely omitted. They're not there. That should hopefully would tell the court it was not intended to include the actions.
Shouldn't
of the
we strictly construe a forfeiture clause?
Absolutely. We cite that in our brief. But I don't believe there's a Nevada case on point in a trust circumstance. But Nevada law is clear. Forfeiture clauses are to be strictly construed. If you strictly construe this language, Ms. Ahern remains in the trust as a beneficiary because her actions were all taken as a trustee. And keep in mind, that was a factual determination by Judge Sturman. And I think the court's well aware of the standard of review of a factual determination.
Abuse of discretion.
Exactly. And can you say that following that two-day trial, Judge Sturman abused her discretion in determining that Ms. Ahern was acting as a trustee? and abused her discretion. Well, actually, the interpretation of no contest clause is a de novo review. But can you state that she reviewed and interpreted this clause improperly when clearly the clause does not call for actions of a trustee?
Let me ask you one more question. I hate to chew up your time. I think I misheard you. I might have misheard you earlier or misunderstood. Did you say her distributions as a beneficiary have ceased?
They're on hold. She's been surcharged.
Right, the surcharge and the distributions ceasing pursuant. The district court said there was no violation, no contest clause, so why were they ceased?
Because Judge Sturman decided. Now, keep in mind, I went through this trial, and then before the second trial, I was removed as counsel. So I'm here on this appeal, so I'm going to tell you what I know.
Okay.
Judge Sturman determined that her actions as trustee and the money that had been misappropriated had to be repaid by her out of her interest as a beneficiary in the trust. Okay. That surcharge is still in effect.
I see. So it's not as a result of violation of no contest clause?
No, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely
I understand.
Not. And that surcharge exists today, and my understanding is close to being paid off.
Okay, got it.
But she has not received a dime from that.
So charge. Let's be clear. There was Judge Sturman found no violation of the no contest clause.
I hope I'm as clear as I can be, and if I'm not being clear, let me make it as clear as I know how to make it. She found no violation of the no contest clause.
And our standard review is abuse of discretion.
On a factual determination as to her actions as a trustee, as to the legal interpretation of the no contest clause, I believe that's a de novo review in all candor. So it's a little different standard, obviously.
Mixed review.
Now, there's something else, and so tall, I have a hard time getting down to your clock.
7.5 minutes.
There's a big issue that's being avoided in this case.
Undue influence?
Yes, sir.
Sounds like I read the stuff right.
If I have to disagree with my colleague on the issue of undue influence, we spent 2 days at trial walking through two documents that were submitted by counsel for the appellants. One was what we call the Let's Get the Record Straight document. The second was the EPS document, the Elderly Protection Services document. I just misstated. That was prepared by the doctors and submitted to Elderly Protection Services. We went on the assumption that when those documents were submitted, they were truthful. The documents submitted by counsel to the court, the Let the Record Be Straight, clearly has the representation by counsel is true and accurate. But even with that understanding, we asked Ms. Montoya at trial about that document, and she said she reviewed it for accuracy, she saw nothing inaccurate, and she was comfortable with the representations contained in that document. And what did we establish as a result of those two documents? It's a rather sad picture. But it's important for you to understand that picture because it puts into context Judge Sturman's ruling. But before we even go there, keep in mind that 1 year before this trial, Fred Wade, the trustee, went to the court in April 2015. And he sought a guardian ad litem, but he didn't properly notice the hearing, and Judge Sturman was correct in denying it at that time. But what did Mr. Wade say? The independent court-appointed trustee. He said there were two powers of attorney out there granted by Ms. Ager. He was concerned. And more importantly, what he said was, who knows how much these people have billed her for. Fred Wade knew as early as 2015 that there were people influencing this woman and had their hands in her pockets. What did we establish at trial through the EPS document and the let the Record Be Straight document? First, we established that she is eccentric. Eleanor is an eccentric person who has allowed people in her life that do not have her best interests at heart.
But does that let her off the hook in terms of what she was charged to do?
No, and she paid a horrible price as a result of it. She paid millions of dollars back in compensatory and punitive damages and attorney's fees.
You know,
she has paid the price.
this comes under partially the first part of this no contest provision where it talks about without litigation, but that's not the part. It's or dispute of any kind. This is kind of the dispute of any kind that we're into.
You
the actions.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, sir. I don't think you can read the second part of that clause without reading the first part of the clause.
Well, that's really why they put an or there, Counselor. I know you want to distinguish, but I have a problem.
Well,
you
know,
it means
or.
That.
Let's do or and say they're disjunctive rather than conjunctive.
Judge Sturman had no problem with the or.
No, she didn't.
But Judge Sturman is not reviewing this, well, Justice Sherry.
I understand that. I'm one vote out of seven.
I understand. Established to assert any claim to the assets of these trusts established herein, attack or oppose or seek to set aside, that still implies litigation. That implies an effort to go into court and set aside the trust. That is what Judge Sturman found in reviewing the totality.
And
of
you
this
left
document.
Off the last part and distribution of said trust.
But you have to read that.
And if there's no money, you can't distribute. And that was the issue that got brought out to us by the taking of funds, and I don't know whether the record got into that, whether there was a loan document or anything else that categorized it, or whether it was just a flat taking of the money.
To say it was confused as to how the money went back and forth would be a mild understatement. I'm going to leave that to the side a second and go back to your interpretation, because again, I say you have to read the document as a whole, but let's only read it from or on. It's still attack, oppose, or seek to set aside the administration distribution of said assets. That implies some type of effort to go into court and somehow reverse or set aside the language of the trust document. That was not done here. But I think you're talking about a policy here. And let me make it real clear. Out of her interest in this estate, the daughters have been made totally whole. They have not lost a nickel in this case.
And they tried to get a guardianship for this woman in 2015?
The trustee tried to have a guardian ad litem appointed. It was denied.
And how old is she? Is she 81, 89, 86?
She's in her early 80s. She's sitting in the courtroom today. All I can say, again, is that through the actions of Mr. Wade, through the actions of the court, she has been made whole. And I want to go back again to the influence issue, because this is a sorry story that was presented to the court. And it's something that I think bothered Judge Sturman. And so we're clear, Judge Sturman had stated concerns about undue influence from my first day in this case. But as early as 2012, the testimony was clear that Ms. Ahern disappeared from the daughters' lives. The Nuwana became her financial advisor, her spiritual advisor, and her accountant. She took over her banking and financial relationships. But even more disturbing than this was the testimony presented through the Let the Record Be Straight document of one of the former caregiver, Lady Manel. She told about efforts to keep the mother from the daughters. She was told to pray to keep the mother from the daughters. She was told by Nuwana that the daughters wanted to institutionalize Miss Ahern. When the daughters confronted Miss Ahern with these facts, she said, I'm going to choose between Nuwana and the two of you. It's kind of a sad story, isn't it? Well, it gets worse. One of the neighbors related an incident to the daughters where Miss Ahern thought they were trying to kill her. Then we go on to the banking issues set out by the Elderly Protection Services document. We have an incident where Ms. Ahern shows up at the bank trying to withdraw a significant sum of money. She was told God told her to do it, and in the alternative, Suzanne Nuwana told her to do it. Nuwana tries to withdraw funds from a drive-up window. The bank, of course, wouldn't allow it.
Finish your statement, please.
All I'm stating is this is a woman who was influenced by others and had did not have her best interest at heart. This fact is taken into account by Judge Sterling. When you apply these facts to the no contest clause, I am confident you will determine that Settlor did not anticipate a situation for the trustee, his elderly daughter, to be influenced by others, and as a matter of law, be thrown out of the trust. That, and as a matter of policy, I can't believe that's the policy of the state of Nevada, because that's nothing more than retribution and revenge. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you have a little less than 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Why should we ignore the issue of undue influence in this case of an 81-year-old or 82-year-old person? I don't understand that. I mean, we've done a big thing in this court
sure.
to try to make sure that people are protected. They're protected persons now.
Sure.
We have a guardianship commission that Justice Hardisty was able to create. That maybe this would not have existed had his commission and the statutes been in effect with what we have now with protection of people who are in their 80s.
And I totally understand. If I had heard what I just heard from opposing counsel, I would feel the same way. But there's a big problem with what was just stated. It was all argument. There was no testimony. Hey,
excuse me, just can we get the clock started, please?
He specifically stated Ms. Nuna did this. Ms. Ahern did this. Neither of those parties took the stand and testified as to anything. What he's relaying is information that he's been told or that's merely argument. We had a trial for this very purpose. Whatever it was they wanted the court to know, they need to tell the court. Now, here's the other issue, Your Honor. How can we say, on one hand, that she should be surcharged and punitively punished, but she's not responsible for her actions because of undue influence?
So you want to take her trust money away?
The court has, and again, this isn't about making the beneficiaries whole.
Wait, you didn't answer my question. So you want to take her trust money away?
The settlers, want to take her money away because they specifically prohibited her actions.
You're their advocate.
I agree, Your Honor. But the problem is, if ever there was a case where a no contest clause should be enforced, it's this one. This woman stole millions of dollars, and the one thing that can't save her, despite her dual rule as trustee and beneficiary, is that right after she was removed as trustee, acting with no authority as trustee, she went to a bank and took $500,000. If that doesn't violate the no contest clause, I'm not sure what does.
Counsel, we've been informed that most of this money has now been paid back and such. The real question for us is, we have a standard abuse of discretion. Why was a district court wrong?
First, the no contest clause was not deemed not triggered. The only thing that Judge Sterman said was it was too harsh. That's not an acceptable exemption under NRS 163.
No, she said it wasn't violated.
She said it was too harsh, in fact, was what...
But the ruling is it wasn't violated.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. She said it was too harsh. Thank you.
I'm glad I get to write.
With that, this matter is...